flack at the front here, so you know, in case of lack of enthusiasm. Cool. So, thank you for coming. Fantastic. My talk was really aimed to be after the talk before. You know, why we're the future. It turns out that there's actually no need for that talk now, so I'm changed it at the last minute. So here it is. This is, yeah, just a boring set of bullets, but the next one gets better. So, why? Well, for a long time, there's been a big opportunity to do this right, I guess. That's the thing. So we want to do... I remember you're German. I will speak more slowly. We're finally, yeah, getting this right. So we're not having a single company in charge. It's vendor neutral. LibreOffice has no code ownership aggregation. Each person that contributes owns part of it. They have a piece of their own there. And it's a real free, you know, this is just something that hackers would love to be part of. It's fun. And so we have loads of volunteers. Red Hat, Vel, Debian, we even have a Canonical guy contributing full time in a competent fashion, which is great. And so really the time has come. The time clearly had come for this 8 months ago when we launched it. The FSF supported us and the OSI in the same press release. That was good. Boycott Novell was supporting us, and Novell was supporting us. That's good, you know. And loads of other people. Just this outpouring, you can go and read the list of companies supporting us. It's just a huge long list of supporting quotes. We're using the LGPLv3 Plus and MPL for new code. We can't change the license to the existing code, unfortunately, which is LGPLv3 only. But this is where we aspire to go. We think it's a good way to follow in Firefox, Mozilla's footsteps, and encourage many people to get involved. So yeah, so we have a vision for something that you can be proud of. I think many people, you know, believe in free software. You know, they don't use a Mac. Is any Mac users here? No, this is good. Look, no Macs. Fantastic. And they believe in free software, and they show Open Office to someone. You know, you should use Open Office. They tell their friends, and then they use it, and then, you know. It's not as good as it could be. So we want to make something that you can be proud of. You know, there's a lot of good functionality there, but we need to make it excellent. So we ship now, easy to move. And why now? Well, really, it was good we did it 8 months ago, because there is a clear future for free office suites today. If we hadn't, there wouldn't be now. But we were promised this foundation for many, many years, and we basically just gave up patience in the end. It's not Oracle's fault. We had really lost patience with Sun and StarDivision, and we had high hopes that when Oracle bought them, because they've got some excellent community knowledge in the company, you know, of the right thing to do. We had high hopes that things would change. Nothing seemed to, although maybe it will now. And so we decided we had to go it alone. So yeah, so don't hate them. Do things because you love freedom, and not because you know, you're against other people, I guess. So yeah. So one of the things that Dirk was telling me earlier, and that lots of other people come and tell me, is that you shouldn't bother, you know? Forget it, it's all a waste of time. They like to encourage me, you know, build me up, you know. No, just, it's a vile calumny. Anyhow, but they often say that the web is going to swallow us all. You know, the web is the future. Everyone will receive all applications at all times in their web browser, on all devices, and that this solves all problems. And that's great. You know, the last time that I heard of a technology that solved all problems was, I think, probably the grid. Although just before that, it was, I mean, Java solves every programming problem, for example. I mean, if you just rewrite in Java, you know, it's easy. You know, yeah, Windows Vista, that solves... So there are a lot of panaceas out there. I don't think they all work. The other slight problem is that if you want a full function Office suite that isn't missing features, like those formulae you need to calculate your spreadsheet, you basically have no choice but to rewrite the entire 8 million lines of code, and we're not done yet, into JavaScript. That's really going to improve performance, for a start, which is already not that wonderful. So, you know, and it's going to work well on your handheld phone, right? You know, I mean, this is the ideal platform for, you know, 10 million lines of JavaScript to run on. This is fantastic, you know? And of course, it's just a transparent nonsense, you know, there's this idea. But so, best of luck. I mean, I don't think it can be done, or it can be done. It's just software, right? I mean, software is easy. So it's possible. conceptually, if you're a conceptual strategist, you can see that this is easy. But best of luck. The other problem is that if you don't have everything in JavaScript on your device, you need the internet. And that's fine because the internet is everywhere these days. Until you roam, you know, try roaming to another country and then paying the data fee when you come home again, you know? So why is there this $1,000 expense bill? Ah, well, that was just me projecting my slides at the conference, you know? So the other thing is that, I mean, this conference is pretty good and this problem's getting better, but imagine going to a conference and then it relying on the Wi-Fi network to get your slides from out there to up there, you know? this is not a clever approach. Nasty. So I think at the end of the day, you know, Google Docs, for example, is very popular. It's a great application. It has a killer feature, which is collaboration, and no one diminishes that. But if you look at how people use it, they use Google Docs a lot, but they also use LibreOffice. You find, or OpenOffice or Microsoft Office, they use a fat client as well. So you find very few places where you can exclusively use that, but you do find places where you can exclusively use the fat client. So, yeah, rent versus buy. I mean, Germans rent their houses. They're very sensible. In America, they buy them using Germans' money that they lent to America to... Yeah, anyway, but either way, there is a choice, you know, rent versus buy. Where do you put the line? And I think we will always be there. Anyhow. The other thing is that my phone is an 80s supercomputer. It's a bit smaller, which is good, doesn't fill the room, but it's incredibly powerful. And also, you know, all of the web hype, I think, you know, there's the App Store hype. You know, apps are the new web, except they're just fat client applications, but rebranded with a four-letter acronym, shortened, I don't know. So, you know, everyone is these days downloading conventional fat client applications and installing them on their conventional fat client device and running them. And they love it. You know, they more Angry Birds levels every day, millions of adverts, you know. And all of this is basically boring old computing, not the exciting new computing where there's a button you mustn't press at the top of the screen marked back. And there's a button that loses all the data you just typed in right next to the left arrow key on your Lenovo machine. I don't know if you buy a ThinkPad, you know, just when you're using the arrow keys, don't touch that button just above the left arrow or the right one, because everything goes. And, you know, when I'm away, I often get these calls from my wife saying, I've lost my email. I spent half an hour typing it. And this is the kind of user compelling user experience that the web can bring you today. You know, it's fantastic. Anyhow. So hopefully that gave you the... On the other hand, I think the canvas and particularly some of the HTML5 stuff let us do some very interesting remote application broadcasting. So I think we can make a whole load of things. And there's a guy, a friend of mine called Alex Larson. And if you haven't seen his GTK on Broadway thing, you need to see it. It's really, really good. And you can run the GIMP inside Firefox. You can run... Galleon or Epiphany inside Chrome, you know, like browser in browser, you know, so you can have two buttons that you can't press to go back before you run your... But either way, you know, so there's a lot of potential there for actually doing something useful. Anyhow, let me tell you about LibreOffice, because it's more interesting. So 8 months in, well, it's going extremely well. We like to draw pictures, because some people find words difficult. So here's a picture. It's good. This is when we started here. Actually, we started sort of in the middle of the month, so the stats... The angle doesn't look particularly exciting, but it was much sharper than that if you look weekly. 180 entirely new code contributors who had actually got code into our repository in the last 8 months. People we've never seen before that have never contributed to the project before. So that's pretty good. 200 active translators, 100 plus languages, I think it's 104. We got 3 releases out. There's another stable one pending, and our development version is coming soon. So, so this is slightly unfair. Oracle is not necessarily declining quite like this, although they may be. We just haven't merged their latest code commits. This stuff tends to go down like this when you're doing a release, just when you have a major release coming up, because people, they merge their commits to the stable branch instead of the development branch, and then we don't count them, which sucks. And they also focus more on those one-line bug fixes that take a day rather than the 100-line feature that needs to be bug fixed next release. So, yeah. So this changes some of that. Either hell. So that's pretty good. So although, you know, 180 people, we only have maybe 40 active people contributing each month, you know, new stuff. But hey, it's good. The other nice thing about this is that it's diverse. I think we've got Canonical on there. There's another company, Lanido, who have doing all sorts of nice consultancy, so they can fix your bugs. And they're in there. But we're really trying to get this so it's not, you know, if the picture looks like this, there is a systemic risk in your project, you know? If anyone buys this guy, or they go bust, or they decide not to do it, suddenly you only have this, you know, which is not good. Whereas if you lose this guy, well, you know, there was something else, right? So it gives you security and safety, and that's good. So what are we doing? Well, we have a vast technical debt, that has never been paid, you know? It's like a collateralized debt obligation. You know, it's a financial instrument. But the punchline is that they never bothered to clean the code up, because that's risky. You know, you could introduce bugs. So much better just leave it and don't touch and hope it's all right. So we have an ancient and gnarled 20-plus-year-old code base. And yeah, it's never really, well, it's been refactored in parts. And yeah, there's all sorts of problems with it. It reads rather like a Windows device driver when shoved into the Linux kernel. I think that's quite a good analogy for some of it. So it needs lots of cleanup. There's a good example of that. So the opt-in approach to lifecycle management. I talked about Java and how it, you know, makes everything perfect earlier. I shouldn't hit on Java so much. Let's take .NET, you know, tenfold productivity improvement. Everything's great. Garbage collection. Unfortunately, garbage collection ruins programmers. You know, it makes them think that memory frees itself. And it doesn't, it turns out, in C++. So here is a graph of the number of open, save, close iterations. So this is an IBM research thing. They just had a macro. It opened a document. It saved the document. It closed the document. So, you know, back to the beginning. And what you'd hope to see is that it doesn't use more memory when you do that. But this is the number of open, save, close iterations. And this is the memory usage in, well, megabytes. So, you know, we're 250 up here. And the end of the line is where it crashes. So, you know. Don't open, save, and close too many documents. So there are serious issues there, as you can see. And we're fixing many of these. Unfortunately, it turns out that if you don't free memory, you can still write to it and read from it later, you know? So sometimes this introduces regressions in performance. So then we have to fix those too, or in stability. So we have to fix those too. But hey, that's cool. What else do we do? Well, we're translating the source code. We have 100,000 plus lines of German comment, at least. And yeah, this is after 10 years of apparent openness. This is, you know, where you could get your changes in, you know, where we are open for improving the code. And some of them are just virtually useless, you know, the cups. If you've read, if you're tired and sad of an evening, you know, if you're feeling depressed, just go and read the cups code. You know, it's just really funny. You could learn to program reading the cups code. It's brilliant. It has things like int I, semicolon, comma, comment, I is an integer variable. So, you know, I mean, like, it's fantastic, you know. Really makes it clearer. Anyhow, we have some of this, but in German, so you can learn German as well as learning to program. Some of them are somewhat more useful. They have things like revision control done in the source code, you know, so you can know exactly when this was done and who did it. Which is great, and our revision control systems have been bad in the past. So, you know, we've transitioned from CVS through Subversion through Mercurial, and we're now using Git, because we like Git. And if you've done that losing history each time, you can understand why people put a comment in saying, this lot belongs together. Which would be fine if they didn't paste that block several places else as well. Anyhow, we have a brilliant German comment detector. So we have automatic language guessing code in LibreOffice, so you can get the spell checker right. So you can go, this paragraph's German, we'll use a German dictionary. This is Swahili, that's, you know. So we run this over the comments in the source code, volunteer did this, and it'll print out all the lines of German comment and where they are. So it's very easy to help. So if you can read this, you know, we need your skills. It would be fantastic to get help fixing that. So what else are we doing? Well, we say we welcome change. You know, we want people to you know, do crazy things with the LibreOffice and make it better. And we'd love to work with you. We have easy hacks, so there's a very easy on-ramp. Some of them are trivial, just translating comments. Some of them are more advanced, you know, threading the spreadsheet engine, whatever. But They're graded, and you know, it's easy to get involved there. What else are we doing? Creating unit tests to try and be sure that the code isn't broken as we ship it. That's kind of useful. And previously, there was nothing that really ran like that. There was a lot of stuff, but none of it really worked, which is a shame. We're removing a whole lot of deprecated cruft. So a library, this VOS library, for example, has been deprecated for a decade. You know, you're not supposed to use it, but it's still there. Nobody bothered to get rid of it. They just said, oh, try not to use that much. And this doesn't make the code easy to read. OS2 support, finally, I think we're killing it. The code base predates C++ templates. So before there were templates, there were big macros. And we still have the big macros. You know, they're used everywhere. They're not really very readable, it turns out. And they behave in odd ways that people don't know. So we're getting rid of those. CPP check, there are a whole load of good C++ lint tools that find bugs. And no one's ever really used them to find bugs. So we run this guy and he goes, oh, you're comparing this is equal to the same thing. What, you know, why is the if A equals A there? Or, you know, there's an assignment where there should be a comparison, or your bitfield, you know, operator's broken here. Lots and lots of simple idiot bugs. And we're just churning through those. In fact, volunteers are doing almost all of that. Instead of duplicating our icons multiple times in memory and on disk, we've decided that's not such a good idea. And so lots and lots and lots of little bits of cleanup everywhere. We're nearly done merging all of the vendors' patch sets from Red Hat, Debian, Ubuntu, I guess, Novell, which is good. And yeah, we're making ourselves smaller and faster. I'll talk about that later. Good. Here's a nice example of a volunteer. Never met the guy, I don't think. Nice chap. Arrives, you know, on the list. He's got a star basic crash, you know? So, unfortunately, well, so he tries to get some little patches in to remove compile time warnings, which is good. We now have a warning-free build, pretty much, which we never had before. Unfortunately, he's beaten to this word count feature. He's gonna fix the word count. So, you know, what should I do? Well, he digs in Bugzilla, finds this great bug here. This bug was filed in, 2007, with a test case saying if you run this, it prints a million out as one, which is not ideal. You know, perhaps we should fix it. Well, it turns out it's a one-line fix, and you know, it's trivial, and it gets in days later, you know? So instead of it festering in Bugzilla for years and years with no one caring, something finally gets done. Similarly, the number one most user-voted feature is SVG import, and we do it now. And you can edit your SVG and fiddle around with it and have fun. Other things we do differently, instead of bundling extensions into a giant extension repository which exists somewhere else, you know, out there, and has a whole load of useful things in it that you need, like this presenter console, so you can see your next slide, and you can read your notes, and it tells you how long you spent doing it. Well, we deliberately split that out of the office so we can put it somewhere where we know almost no one downloads it. That was the open office view. Quite why, I don't know. But we bundle a whole load of things that we know are really useful. PDF import. You know, you want to tweak your PDF, you know, you want to edit it. Well, you can do that in LibreOffice. It's trivial. It comes bundled. You want to project some slides? Well, that works too. You want to do report editing in the database? Again, you know, that works. We have new features. We have an experimental thing so that we can include features that aren't ready, so we can get wider testing to them, so we can ship them in a release, but disabled by default, and then we can enable them, and people can play and crash their suite and file bugs for us. So that's good. And one of those is Jonas Jensen's and Luke Dixon's inline formula editing, so you can edit the formula in place. So that's pretty cool. So one of the other things I was going to talk about at great length, and I will do briefly, is talk about community structure and licensing and code ownership. What was it that happened here that suddenly made all these guys interested in actually contributing to the project? Is it just an easy hacks page? Because they're kind of easy to put together, you know? I mean, you can write an easy hacks page in 5 minutes, you know? And what I'd like to argue is what changed here is that we made it a truly open project, vendor neutral, with fair licensing. And a key here, I think, is to check the license applies to everyone. So people care a lot about licensing, and that's good. Of course, it's very important. But if you assign your rights to a company then there are lots of other people that get licenses that you need to care about too, and you can't see those licenses. And they can be very scary indeed. So I think step one of working, before you work on a project, is to check that everyone has the same license. I think that's absolutely critical. And so I think this assignment of ownership is really, I guess it's a subtle threat to software freedom. And it's one that we need to understand more. Actually, you don't need to assign copyright to a company to do this. Actually, you can do it in simpler ways. You can just make your contribution with very liberal license. You know, my contribution is public domain, or it's BSD, and then they relicense it under their restrictive or commercial license as well. So, yeah. And actually, it doesn't matter whether it's copyright you assign, or whether you just give a very liberal license. If you look at the people who do a really good job of getting your code and owning it, and making sure, really sure that they own it, you know, first they try assignment, but it doesn't work in every jurisdiction. So then they go for a perpetual, irrevocable, worldwide, no charge, royalty-free, unrestricted, no moral rights, blah, 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 license. It's just the same thing. You gave all of your rights to someone else, and you gave up any control over how those are used. So why should I care? Well, I'm not going to go into these into great detail, but I think that if, as soon as you join a project, and you write your first patch, and you compile it, and you understand it, and you submit your patch, which you know is beautiful, you know, and it fixes the problems, and they say, that's a great patch, we'd love to include it, but we need to own it all, down to the very last semicolon, before your patch is valuable. Because actually, what this project is about is not about the, you know, the software that you may be falling in love with, it's actually about our commercial interest. So we're willing to totally throw away your patch unless we can own all of it. Oh, but we want this for good reasons. You know, we want to defend you. You know, actually, it turns out the risk to individuals, particularly in Germany, is nil from any kind of, you know, patent infringement, unless you're stealing other people's copyright code. So it creates this barrier of delay. It creates a legal barrier for anyone to contribute. And it sucks, and people don't like that. My friend Soren Sandman is at the back, I think. He's pretty famous in my mind, because I used to go around and encourage people to sign these documents. You know, sign your rights away, sign the JCA today. And he looked at it and said, you know, I like you and all that, but I'm not signing that, no way, no. And I think that's a great position, and I've come to that view myself. Ultimately, I think it's wise. So, I think another problem is that it disrupts a delicate hacker-suit-wearer balance. So I don't think, how many suits are there in the audience? Can anyone see a suit? I think it's one over there. But there aren't many. And the problem is that suit-wearers often are obsessed with money. I mean, they spend a lot on buying it, right? You've got to pay that investment back, right? And traditionally, these suit-wearers, they go and they sell software. So you know, Novell and SUSE employ these people, and so do Red Hat. You know, I'm sure. And they go and they fight each other, you know? They go to a customer's, you know, instead of a boxing ring, but they go to the customer and they both stand in front of the customer and say, he is short, fat, ugly, bald, his software doesn't work, we are the best, buy us, right? And on the other side they go, oh, you know, well, I hit harder and, you know, and they're not friends, right? But you come down the pile, and I've got loads of friends in Red Hat, just tons of them. They're awesome. We work on the same software projects together, we love each other, and ultimately, we try to make sure that war doesn't intrude into the projects, right? And this is how free software development is supposed to be, right? The problem is, when you have assignment, actually, the people who own the assets, who can say how they're licensed and controlled, and what happens to them, are not us at the bottom. They're the guys at the top. This creates some serious scope for conflict. So a great way to poison your project and to kill any other companies investing in it is to have copyright assignment. And if you look at copyright assignment-based projects, typically they have only one major sponsor and maybe some volunteers, maybe a few alliances, but that's pretty much it. There is a huge systemic risk, and I guess that's point three. It just entrenches that control, it excludes competitors. And from the good of free software, we can't afford to give individual companies projects. because they will strangle that space and try and extract as much money from it as possible. So I think it's a very dangerous thing. But finally, these salespeople then tend to create FUD around free software licenses and practices. So they say, yeah, you could use the GPL version of MySQL, but what if? Have you considered how dangerous the GPL is? You know, what about patent protection from other things? What about, you know? And so there's this general drive to try and push people towards signing licenses that are usually much less helpful. And actually, it turns out that we do have a contributor agreement, but it's the license that we use. There's this beautiful symmetry. You know, our inbound license is the same as our outbound license. You know, the LGPL v3, the LGPL v3. You know, everyone gets the same terms. And I'm not a lawyer, which is probably a good thing. But Richard Fontana at Red Hat is, and he's got a great talk. I encourage you to read his talk. But the punchline is this, that the legal benefits of greater control that copyright assignment gives you, and there are some legal benefits. Let's not be confused. There are some. But they're sufficiently dubious, unsure, uncertain, you know, small, to not justify the harm done to the community by assignment. I think that's a very good balance. Because you can always talk to a lawyer who says, oh, we must have this, blah, blah, blah. But actually, the harm that that does is just massively outweighs it. But worse, contributor agreements seem to suggest the free software licenses that we all use and that we rely on are not actually good enough. And then, of course, there's all sorts of ethical concerns. So anyway, let me encourage you not to assign your rights to any corporation and to try and resist that. For the good of everyone. So LibreOffice needs your help. We have lots of nice new features. Yeah, VBA. If you like programming in VBA, don't admit it now. But you come to me later, and you know, there are things that we can do to try and help that work. But there are ways you can get involved. So mirroring, for example, if you're a sysadmin and you can run a mirror site, or you know, you've got lots of bandwidth. We can help, and we can help you do more for less. So one of the things OpenOffice does is that it has one translation in each Windows install. So a Windows install is something like 140 megabytes, and then you have 50 of them, which adds up to about this 76 gigabyte number when you do all of the math. We put all of our languages in one thing, having done the engineering work to make this actually small enough. So we're only 180 megabytes, maybe 20 megabytes bigger, but we have all of our translations all in one lump. So look, you can just save tons of RAM and disk space and, you know, in your machine. So, and we're getting smaller. So yeah, and we use Mirror Brain, and our mirror service should be outstanding. If you're a translator, yeah, so part of that is that we have this no language favoritism policy, so we bundle all of the active translations. And so you can quickly see your translation actually getting out there. We have these minor releases. Instead of releasing every 3 months to 6 months, we release every month, pretty much. So, you know, when it's released, if it's not translated, your translation can be in the next release. It's only 3-4 weeks away, you know? So you can polish it and get it really, really excellent. Yeah, see the results of your work in your own lifetime, which is good. What else? Oh, we can import Microsoft Works files that other people can't. These are distinctive features that only LibreOffice has, I guess, in comparison to our major competition. So yeah, move to ODF via LibreOffice. We can do that pretty well. What am I doing? Aha, can you program? If you can program. Well, we have loads of things. First, we have a mailing list. It doesn't do reply to mangling, like all of the OpenOffice ones did. So you're actually likely to get a reply if you mail a list, which is cool. So you don't need to be subscribed. And we don't need, well, we do need ultra elite programmers, but actually it's not necessary. There's plenty of entry level problems. And we have a nice page listing them. And whatever your language skills, we've got it. You know, isn't that fantastic? So I don't think we have Haskell, but pretty much everything else is there. You know, XSLT, you know, if you're good at that, you shouldn't be. It's trending below COBOL on the Google Trends, just so you know. If you're a fan of XSLT, you should be a bigger fan of COBOL. Anyway. Shell, we got lots of Shell, Basic, Perl, Python, Java, C, C++, it's all there, right? We even have, yeah, Webby bits, Java, Script, you know, for some of our front-end stuff. We need your help. And there are tons of simple tasks to get in. So removing pointless comments that just don't say anything useful. Porting from Java to Python, you know, because we don't ship Java on Windows. It seems a bit silly, but we do ship a small Python runtime. and Java to C++, which can speed things up a lot. Base 64, you know, in those MIME attachments, you get base 64 encoded things. We have four copies. We had four copies of the base 64 encoding code. You know, each one of them different, probably with different bugs. I think we only have three of them now, but there are another two to go. You know, so if it's a very complicated type of API, a base 64 encoding. But so you know, you could do that. That would be cool. Uncalled code. We have hundreds of thousands of lines of code that can't be run. You know, it's just no one links to it, but it's still there, and it's great to get rid of it. CPP check. There are loads of easy bugs to fix that this thing throws out. Obsolete macros, loads of lines of them. We have QA test tool that presses lots of buttons in the user interface. Unfortunately, because of race conditions on various different machines, many of them in the past, you know, the dialog might have not popped up. So, you know, you press the show me the dialog button, and the dialog might not have come up yet. So it's important that the test waits 2 or 3 seconds, just in case it hasn't come up, you know? So it's easy to leave several machines there, you know, just doing nothing but sleeping, you know, sort of 95, 98% sleeping, running the QA tooling, which also interestingly lasts nearly a week if you run it, because it's mostly sleeps, right? So there's some engineering tasks that need doing there to fix that up. And more hardcore stuff, writing unit tests. Sometimes we leak timers, so the CPU just sits there in a busy loop, virtually you'd know until your laptop melts your lap, you know, which is not good. And there's all sorts of, you know, fun things there. This is a new feature. Oh yeah, so styles are really cool and all that, but it turns out that doing page styles is really hard. And particularly because odd and even numbered pages tend to end up with different styles, all sorts of nasty things. So we have a nice new dialog to get title pages to actually work, which is kind of cool, and it's pretty easy to use. And more easy hacks. Character count without spaces. Now that's a difficult one too, right? I mean, you know, do you think you could do the, because we've already got the character count, right? But doing it without counting the spaces would be kind of a nice feature. So finding your old Word 1 files, right? That would be useful. Actually, it turns out we have all of these filters that we don't know if they work still. So it would be really good to get some test documents because, you know, I mean, I started on Word 5, but we really go way back, you know? So if you have some of those, let us know. Copy and paste detectors. There's really quite a lot of exciting copy and paste around the place. You know, there are good tools for finding that. We'd love to be acting on the results of that. If you're a German, yeah, we have major source code translation problems, as you can see. And it would be just fantastic if we could work out what some of these things mean, you know, because I think that actually exists in there. So, you know, some of these others are more speculative. Oh, I only have 10 minutes, right? Okay, perfect. So, what else do we have? Yeah, Lotus Word Pro, we import that beautifully. Users, I mean, users can do useful things, triaging bugs, filing good bugs that actually clearly describe the problem, and being patient and realizing that you don't have a right to have your bug fixed. That's what part of being a good user is, you know? Actually, we have a right to ask you to do the work to help us fix your problem. You know, so actually being good about helping with that. Being part of the test team, testing, you know, builds before they're ready. That's good. What else? WordPerfect files. Yeah, all your legacy WordPerfect. That's great to move in and with beautiful graphics, embedded multimedia. They have this 6-month release train, which is quite nice. And what it means is basically don't use a 0.0 release if you're a paranoid, because they are out to get you and it will crash, probably, when you do something. So, you know, but then the 0.3 release is probably getting pretty stable. You know, I think the Linux kernel champion, you know, this kind of thing, many other projects, you know, GNOME and KDE do the same thing. And I think it comes from the realization that even with the best will in the world, as much testing as you do, you're still gonna find problems when you release it. And so we have what's called a time-based release, so we try and release on time. OpenOffice had a release when we think it might be ready-ish sort of approach, which led to sort of 13-week slips, which is, you know, like 3 and a bit months, which is quite a long time to slip your release, you know, if you're trying to predict when it's gonna be. Pretty bad. And the worst thing is, of course, the week after they released, they found more bugs that if they discovered them a week before would have been blockers. You know, so obviously they just gave up trying after a while, and that's why they found no more bugs to fix, and it just doesn't work, that model, at all. Much better to release it and then release another fix. And so in those, you know, 3 months, we will have released 4 releases that incrementally improves stability. And so yeah, that's basically where we're at. What else? Pretty icons? Look at those pretty icons. What's new? Okay, well, the first thing is, instead of using SDF files, which are a random, made up by OpenOffice, non-standard translation file format, we use PO files, which kind of, you would have thought that was obvious. We also use Pootl, which helps translate nicely on the web. We shrunk our downloads in 3.4 versus 3.3 by 30 megabytes each for the Windows build through better compression and some other tricks. Pretty document shadows, and many of these are just minor features, but some of them are done by, you know, people outside the project, new guys that we've never seen before. Graphite 2, if you have very complicated text rendering, we can do that, you know, even the Thai stuff where the cursor jumps all about the place funkily. Lots of calc improvements by all sorts of good guys. We even integrate with Unity, look at that, isn't that fantastic? You know, our menus can go out of place, I think you'll picture that next. We can now export ODF in flat file format and import it, so, you know, you can do your XSLT on it, or your COBOL on it, or whatever, you know, easily. And you can save that really fast. And it's as fast as a zip file. We just basically threw out the Java, but it's pretty much as fast as anything else. And so all your images and things are Base64 encoded there with one of the implementations, and so on. Better native theme integration, so it looks better under GDK, you know, nicer widgets, nicer menu separators, and so on. Dead code fixing, you know, these are just some flavor of examples, things people have done. I guess you can see there that, you know, here is the window inside, and there is the menu up at the top. I think there's a usability reason why that's really good. Maybe. Anyhow, what's coming in 3.4, some other things. Okay, export. So one of the things that we had was that back in the day, 20 plus years ago, we created a binary file format. And this was in the days of object orientation. Before Java was going to solve every programming problem in the world and make you 10 times as productive, object-oriented programming was going to solve every problem in the world and make you 10 times as productive. And it turned out it's a solution for everything. And so one of the nice things is, a key concept is encapsulation. You know, your object knows, only your object knows about its data structures and its internal details, right? Which is good. And so when you want to save your document, you've just got all these objects, right? So you just make each one of them save themselves. It's obvious, right? And you end up with this binary stream, and when it comes back, you get each object to load itself, and that's all good. Nice, right? Sensible. No? Then you realize that you screwed up your object hierarchy, and really you need to refactor your application so that actually the paragraph is split into three other objects, one of which is over there. And you start looking at your filter logic and saying, what? We can't refactor it like that. That's never going to work. We better just kludge it in this other way. And so after many years of doing that, you suddenly realize that this can't go on. And so what was done in OpenOffice was that they cut and pasted the entire Office suite. So there are really two OpenOffices in there. And they called one the bin filter. And so that loads the nasty, old, horrible binary things, and then exports effectively ODF. And then the other, you know, real suite loads the ODF, and life is good because it's XML, right? XML was the panacea in between, I think, anyway. So that's good, except it's still all there, and we have to compile it, and it's called the bin filter. And it's not quite all of it that was cut and pasted, so there are some problems there. It takes hours to compile, and it loads file formats that went out of date more than 10 years ago. And it still saves them, which is great, huh? Except we don't really need that. So we've got a volunteer who's ripping out the ability to save, 15, 20-year-old file formats, which is great. Save size downloads. I think we'll be dropping that in 4.0. The main people this affects are Germans, because Germans bought Star Suite version 1, whereas many other people didn't. So if you feel angry about this, come and tell me. Otherwise, we're just going to, you know, kill it all. What else? Yeah, better find dialogue, you know, sort of interactive Mozilla-like stuff, and lots of other, you know. For example, we duplicated 150 duplicate icons, which were the missing icon, you know? Why have one missing icon when you can duplicate it 150 times? You know, I mean, who knows, right? So, I mean, they're actually looking for that specific missing icon. And so, anyhow, this reduces bloat and size, and in fact, they were not only duplicated once, but twice, and then high contrast and low contrast, you know, anyway. So there would have been at least four copies of each one. Palette files, you know, just reducing dumb stuff, you know, fixing, and there are, you know, loads of thousands of lines of code that is just not compiled, just dead code lying about. So LibreOffice is going well, you know. I think we're making some great progress, and I'm very encouraged. A lot of it is not particularly flashy, showy at the moment. But you know, there are a lot of bugs there to fix that actually real users care about. We're making cross-compilation, particularly and compilation faster for Windows. Yeah, these unit tests are key. SmartArt, there's a lot of new feature work that we have on the plate coming along. And the hope is that having cleaned the code up, we'll be starting to clean the UI up, and you know, all of these new exciting features will be coming. But even so, there's polish going in. You know, finally, it's starting to look better. Governance. I'm not particularly interested in governance, so I think it's important to get it right. But what are we doing? Oh, we tried to raise 50,000 euros, and we accidentally raised 100,000 plus euros, which was good in a month and a bit. And so we can now incorporate in Germany and have a foundation, a Stiftung. Does that mean something? Yeah, anyway. In Germany, so that's, we're looking for a place, a federal state that wants to love us, nurture us, and give us good things. So we're shopping around German states at the moment. If you know a German state that has lots of cash, that cares about free software, let me know. We have our bylaws, which is basically the articles of incorporation and governance. Basically, it's a meritocracy. This sounds radical, but you can't just turn up in the project and get a vote. You have to actually turn up in the project, contribute something, and then you get a vote. This is a big change. So we're trying to make that. It looks basically like the GNOME or KDE, I guess, organizations. It's quite obvious, but it's all written up. And we're getting a membership bootstrapped with the membership committee is deciding who has done something and who hasn't, and steering committee. So so we're cool. We're big. We aspire to being a big. We're getting pretty big, you know. Less hundreds of contributors. Diverse, vigorous, fun, vendor neutral, Linux-like community. And you want to get in there early, because people who get in there early do well. Yeah, I got in early on the GNOME project, and it was good for my career, honestly. Not through any great skill of my own, but I happen to know some people. And you've got 4 months before it's the end of the first year, you know. So get involved today. Be ungrateful to corporate control projects. Don't sit there and say, oh, look at this project. You know, all of the people contributing code to it are this one company. Where would we be without them? You know, it would be terrible. If it weren't for them, we wouldn't have this. Well, actually, it's not true. If it weren't for them owning it and controlling it and strangling it, there would be lots of other companies investing in it, and it would be safer, more diverse, more fun to work with, and better. So learn to be ungrateful, you know? You are screwing this project up, even though you contribute everything to it, right? It's not a healthy project. Strike a disproportionate blow for freedom. Sure, you can go and fix a bug in GCC, and that's good, and I've done it. But the reality is there aren't that many GCC users out there, you know? And they're not grateful for my warning that I added, you know? They complain that it's not quite right in some cases. But there are 100 million users using OpenOffice and LibreOffice and migrating to LibreOffice. And so, you know, every cycle you save, that's a lot of people. I have 1 minute, that's great. So we'll have 100 million users. You know, do make your blow for freedom, no matter how small, somewhere where it makes a big difference. Yeah, and get people excited about the free software they'll have to use. So, you know, we don't want to be forcing people to use software that's bad. We want to have good free software that people love to choose and love to use. So yeah, try an easy hack, get stuck in. Get stuck to it, you know, all your legs, and don't leave. That's my tip. And thanks for all your help. We couldn't have done it without the passion and the help of our community, particularly, you know, in Germany, there's been a groundswell of support that made LibreOffice and the Document Foundation possible. So we rely on you guys. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Michael.